This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In this edition today, our bulletin of church news that will be followed by Panorama and then our feature of Echo of the African Synod. Today we shall close with that segment dedicated to Millennium Appointment. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Pope Francis is inviting the people of the world to continually reflect on our relationship with the poor, saying that at this moment of the coronavirus, we should watch against falling into the temptation of the culture of indifference. The Pope said this even as he lamented about the overcrowded prisons, whose reality, he said, could lead to a calamity. He made this observation in his homily during the Mass that he celebrated on Monday morning in the chapel of the Santa Marta residence at the Vatican. Devin Watkins reports.
Pope Francis focused his homily at Mass on Monday morning on Jesus' words, "You always have the poor with you." In the day's Gospel passage, Judas laments what he sees as the waste of costly perfumed oil to anoint Jesus' feet. He said that money could have gone to the poor. But Pope Francis said Judas only appears to think of the poor. What he really cared about was money. Judas held the common purse and was a thief.
Sempre attuale. Sempre ce ne sono. Anche a un alto livello.
This story of the unfaithful administrator is always current, said Pope Francis, adding that they are always around, even at a high level. He said there are some charitable or humanitarian organizations that have many employees, and only about 40% of donations make it to the poor because the rest goes to pay salaries. The Pope said this is a way of taking money from the poor. He went on to say that there are a great many poor people who are hidden and who are victims of economic and financial systems. Many struggle to make it to the end of the month, even if they have a job. He said he once visited an abandoned factory in Buenos Aires where around 15 families with children lived.
Ogni famiglia aveva dei mobili buoni, mobili che ha un ceto medio.
Every family had good furniture with a television set, he said. They ended up in that sad state because they couldn't pay their rent. He said these people are the new poor who are forced to leave their homes because they can't afford them. Finally, Pope Francis said that Jesus' first question on the Day of Judgment will be, "How did you treat the poor? Did you feed them?"
Quando Gesù dice, "I poveri li avete sempre con voi," vuol dire, "Io sarò sempre con voi nei poveri."
When Jesus says, "You always have the poor with you," said Pope Francis, what he is really saying is, "I will always be there with you in the poor." I'm Devin Watkins.
Following his Palm Sunday Angelus, Pope Francis greeted the faithful taking part through the means of social communications. In particular, he said, "My thoughts go out to the young people all over the world who are living today's Diocesan World Youth Day in an unprecedented way." The Diocesan World Youth Day is marked annually on Palm Sunday, which this year fell on 5th April. Sunday 5th April should have also marked the handing over of the cross from the young people of Panama, where the last World Youth Day took place in 2019, to those of Lisbon, where the next World Youth Day will take place in 2022. This very significant gesture has been postponed and will now be taking place on Christ the King Sunday on 22nd November, said the Pope. "While awaiting for that moment, I urge you young people to cultivate and witness to the hope, to the generosity and the solidarity of which we are all in need in this difficult moment," he added. Looking ahead, Pope Francis noted that Monday, 6th April, marks the United Nations International Day of Sports for Development and Peace. "In this period, many sporting events have been suspended," said the Pope. "Despite this," he continued, "we are able to see the best fruits of sports emerge." Pope Francis concluded by asking the faithful to journey in faith toward Holy Week, in which Jesus suffers, dies, and rises. He invited all those who are unable to participate in the liturgical celebrations to gather together in prayer at home, aided by the means of technology. The Vatican has announced that the Archbishop of the Shrine of the Holy House of Loreto is to preside over the holy recitation of Marian prayers during the Holy Week. Starting on Monday, 6th April, every day at noon local time, Vatican News will provide live streaming of the event presided over by Archbishop Fabio Dauchin. This will consist in the recitation of the Rosary and the Angelus Prayer from the Marian Shrine of Loreto. Archbishop Dauchin is the pontifical delegate for the shrine. He recently said that the Holy House of Loreto invites us to invoke Mary so as not to lose hope in the God of life. He invited the faithful to join every day at midday. You can also join us at 9 p.m. every evening for the recitation of the Rosary and the supplication to Our Lady of Loreto to free us from evil and from the pandemic, he said. The bishops of Nigeria have asked for particular attention and care for the poor who are going to be affected by the measures taken by the government in the fight against the spread of the coronavirus. The president of the Regional Episcopal Conference of West Africa, RECOWA, who is also Archbishop of Abuja, Monsignor Ignatius Kaigama, fears that the poor may suffer from hunger in the campaign to fight the COVID-19 and has therefore raised an alarm to the authority to that effect. According to RECOWA News Agency, the Archbishop has also invited all the bishops to render their support to the poor in their respective pastoral contexts. Adding to the appeal of Bishop Kaigama is the Archbishop of Benin City, who also doubles as president of the Catholic Bishops Conference of Nigeria, Monsignor Augustine Obiora Akubeze, who has declared that it is those who subsist on daily wages that suffer the most, and has exhorted the bishops of Nigeria to coordinate all means in their dioceses in order to render assistance to all. He has encouraged the national bishops to find the best ways to help all those whose source of livelihood has been affected by the restrictive measures taken by the government in the fight against the coronavirus. The bishops have urged Catholics and the Catholic leadership to cooperate with the directives of the civil authorities, saying now is not the time to look at faults because what is being put in place is for the benefit of everyone. Meantime, the African Union has said that the African continent is likely to lose around 20 million jobs because of the COVID-19. The African Union says that Africa's economy could shrink up to 1.1% this year due to the impact of the coronavirus pandemic. The African Union made this statement in a recent study entitled Impact of the Coronavirus on the African Economy, which underscores the fact that the African gross domestic product will now shrink. Reuters reports that so far Africa accounts for just a fraction of total cases of the disease, which has infected more than 1 million people worldwide. But African economies are already facing an impending global economic slump, falling oil and commodity prices, and a collapsing tourism sector. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
King Mohammed VI of Morocco has pardoned close to 5,700 prisoners and ordered measures to protect inmates from the coronavirus outbreak, the Justice Ministry said on Sunday. The inmates were selected on the basis of their age, frail health, time spent in prison, and good conduct. The North African country has confirmed as of Sunday morning 919 coronavirus cases, including 59 deaths. Meanwhile, South Sudan on Sunday became the 51st of Africa's 54 countries to report its first case of COVID-19. First Vice President Riek Machar and the UN mission in South Sudan confirmed that a UN worker who arrived in the country from the Netherlands on the 28th of February is ill with the disease. To prevent the spread of the virus in South Sudan, President Salva Kiir last week imposed a curfew from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. for 6 weeks and closed borders, airports, schools, churches, and mosques. The three countries in Africa that have so far not reported any cases of COVID-19 are Lesotho in Southern Africa and the island nations of Comoros and Sao Tome and Principe. In another development, President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi of Egypt has postponed the launch of mega projects, including the Grand Egyptian Museum and moving civil servants to a planned new capital city to 2021 from 2020 due to the coronavirus outbreak. And a new study by the African Union says the continent could lose about 20 million jobs due to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. The study, entitled Impact of the Coronavirus on the Africa Economy, also found that African governments could lose up to 20-30% of their fiscal revenue. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
The African Synod, the Church Alive in Africa Today.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. Pope Francis on Wednesday appointed Bishop Zolile Peter Mpambane as the new Archbishop of Bloemfontein in South Africa. Bishop Mpambane, who has been serving as Bishop of Kokstad Diocese, was appointed after the Holy Father accepted the resignation of Archbishop Jabulani Adatus Numalo, who reached the age of 75 last year. Sheila Pirish spoke to him shortly after his appointment and began by asking him about his reaction upon receiving the news.
Archbishop-elect, thank you so much for availing yourself and talking to us right here on Vatican News. How do you feel with the latest appointment?
Well, Sheila, it brought me mixed feelings, to be honest, because, you know, to be taken from a diocese where I've been trying to build something up with the faithful, and all of a sudden I have to drop that and leave for another diocese, you know, it brings some kind of pain. But at the same time, well, the work of the Lord continues, you know, on the other side too, because where I'm going, I'm still going to continue with the work of the Lord, which He has called me to do. So that's why I have these mixed feelings.
Former Archbishop had been there for 15 years, and you coming in after 15 years, that's quite big shoes to fill, don't you think?
Well, I don't think, you know, it's big shoes to fill, Sheila, because if he has been there for 15 years, then I have firm belief that he has done a good job and that the faithful there know what to do, because by now, after 15 years, I don't think they should depend too much, you know, on the bishop, even on the priest, because by now they should be well-equipped and well-empowered. This is my belief. If not, then I will have to engage, you know, in empowering the faithful so that by the next 10 to 12 years, they will be very strong in their faith as well as in knowledge of the teachings of the Catholic Church.
Let's get back to you. Let's come back to your vocation. When and how did you decide to become a priest? We know that the German missionaries had a very serious impact in your life.
Yeah, for sure, Sheila. And now you're asking me a year. I might not remember the year exactly, but I was 8 years old when I told my parents that I wanted to become a priest. It must have been 1965, you know, when I told my parents.
Wow, interesting. And what was the reaction? And going forward, did you continue to have that feeling, that belief, that that's exactly who you're going to be?
I never changed my mind, Sheila, from that day onwards. The reaction of my parents, actually it was my mother who reacted vocally and had some advices to give me, because when I told them, she asked me three questions. The first question was, do you know that when you want to become a Catholic priest, you are not going to get married? I said, I don't know, but I still want to become a Catholic priest. The second one was, do you know that when you are a Catholic priest, you are not going to earn a salary and you are not going to be able to support us? I said, well, even then, I would like to become a Catholic priest. The third last question was, do you know that when you're a Catholic priest, it's like we have given you freely to the church. You are not anymore our child. You belong to the church. I said, that is welcome if you give me the sign. And she said, well, if that's the will of God, carry on, my son. It's only my father who said, well, you are still young, you might change your mind. But till today, I never even thought of changing my mind.
Very beautiful story indeed. So up to today, what can you say have been the highlights of your apostolate, your priesthood?
Well, I exercised the most of my priesthood in the Diocese of Aliwal North as a religious to the community of the priests of the Sacred Heart FCJ, but also working in the parishes under Bishop Frederick Lobinger, who at that time, from whom I learned quite a lot of things, more especially when it comes to the empowering and the teaching of the faithful. You know, imparting knowledge to the faithful that they must know their faith and they must know what the church teaches. So I learned to use, you know, the newsprint and the copy pen in teaching the people from Bishop Lobinger. And I carried that with me even now. You know, empowering the faithful is one of my strongest points in my ministry.
And of course, you've been in charge of the laity as well under the SACBC. Talk to us about this part of your apostolate.
Well, talk about that. Well, this is a new apostolate. Remember, I only started, actually, beginning of this year. Last year, I just was new. So in that, I would like, as I'm saying, you know, empowering the laity. That's the strongest point. And I have just helped the laity, you know, at our AGM. I've just helped them to draw, you know, an organogram, a structure, which will help us not only to be talking about the laity, you know, at a higher level. We need to empower the laity at the grassroots so that they know what is the importance of the lay people, so that from there, you know, things can flow either upwards or downwards, so that whatever we discuss at that high structure, you know, at the SACBC level, will reach the faithful in the parishes, because everything must happen at the parishes.
And so what are you looking forward in your new appointment?
Well, I'm looking forward to meeting new people and meeting new challenges and having to respond to those challenges. But I also look forward, you know, to working in a very close cooperation with the priests of the Metropolitan in empowering the people of God and in teaching the people of God. Because it is very important, you know, that we all work together and have the same vision in going forward. I believe that the Archdiocese should have the vision that clarifies its mission by now, and to adhere to that vision and find more ways and more means, you know, to go forward. Because it's not the beginning, it's just going forward, because there has been somebody there and the people are there. I believe that those people have their roots in there. The Archbishop did not have his roots healthy going. I will also not have the roots when I arrive there, but by the time I leave, those people should have firm roots in their faith.
And how have the lay faithful in your diocese reacted to your appointment?
Sheila, I must say they are very, very devastated, disappointed, and they have been crying, you know, because this came as a very big bomb. You know, it comes more especially in a time when we are all locked down at our homes and they cannot even come and cry with me or just have a word with me. They find themselves devastated in their own houses. But along with that, the next day, you know, the very people who have been crying came back to console me and to congratulate me for the appointment. And, well, even though also they have mixed feelings, even those congratulations, they would have loved to still stay with me.
And as you said, this very big and exciting news came at a time when we are locked down. We are going through this pandemic of COVID-19. How are you dealing with the whole situation of COVID-19?
Well, Sheila, I did send a communication, you know, before this started, as well as when I learned about the lockdown, I sent another communication through the press and through the social media. And many people are aware of what is happening. And I keep on, you know, calling my press and talking to them and encouraging them and also asking them to carry on, you know, strengthening their faithful and giving them, you know, the information that we are all united as Catholics, you know, even though they cannot attend Mass. Whenever we celebrate Mass, we are with them in our prayer. And I also encourage them, send them some prayers to do while they are at home together, as well as, you know, the breaking of the bread, which is the word of God in their families. I mean, the you know, the body of Christ is difficult for them to have access to. But the breaking of the bread of the word of God is very, very important. And to keep on, you know, praying the Stations of the Cross, also praying the reflections, the Lenten reflections that they were given, and now that time is almost over. I will also send around another communication, you know, to strengthen them to say something about Easter to them, which is very important, I guess, to everybody who's staying at home.
Well, lastly, what is your message for this Easter?
Well, my message for the Easter to the people is that, you know, even though we cannot gather in any church, the strength of the Easter message is that Jesus conquered, you know, death and conquered sin by death. And this conquering of death and sin gives us a strong message that even this COVID virus, you know, will be conquered. And we will finally be free and be able to exercise our faith and to live our daily life with the Lord. And so long as we put our hope and trust in God, who will finally, you know, win over the COVID virus. And I say to the people, they must still be strong and stay at home as it's encouraged, so that we can flatten the curve of this COVID-19, and so that afterwards we can be able to be free people again.
That was the Archbishop-elect of Bloemfontein in South Africa, Zolile Peter Mpambane, speaking there to Sheila Purish.
And that's all for this edition of the African Synod, The Church Alive in Africa Today. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali.
You are welcome to Millennium Appointment. In this edition, we look at aging and the social challenges that come with it. Aging is the process of becoming older. It represents the accumulation of physical, psychological, and social changes in us. Our reaction to events may slow down with age, while knowledge of worldly events and wisdom may expand. Experience shows that as we grow old, we become more prone to human diseases. Human beings by nature are social creatures. Throughout the socialization process, we become accustomed to living in groups and interacting with others. In many societies where community life is emphasized, elderly people are usually not isolated or discriminated against. However, in some societies where individualism is the norm, it is a risk to become old, even though aging is the natural destiny of every human being. Today, many elderly people are more isolated than in the past because of a number of factors, including family violence, loss of a spouse, aging-related cognitive impairments, physical disabilities, and transport issues, as well as the decreasing size of families. In the past, elders would move in with their children. Now, many are moved into elder homes with less frequent contact with their children. Tijani Muhammad Bande is the current president of the United Nations General Assembly.
The number of people aged 60 and older is set to outnumber youth by 2030. We must ensure that older persons are recognized as stakeholders in every element of our work.
Another social challenge is that many elderly people are victims of discrimination because of their age. old people are frequently assumed to be in poor physical or mental health and lack psychological liveliness. In addition, it is commonly presumed that as people grow old, they become more uncompromising and more conservative in their opinion. Older adults still in active service have reported prejudices against them in the workplace. These include the assumption that they are mentally useless and incompetent.
The journey to age equality requires collective action to remove barriers that exclude and discriminate against older persons, to enable all people to age with security and dignity while fully participating in society. I encourage member states to adopt and implement non-discriminatory policies, legislation and regulations to empower older persons and ensure their full participation in societies. Key issues which will facilitate progress in this area include adaptive labor policies, social protection, universal health coverage, and lifelong learning.
That was the President of the United Nations General Assembly, Tijani Muhammadi Bande. More reports show that elderly people suffer physical, emotional, sexual, financial, and mental abuses committed through intentional or neglectful acts by a caregiver, a relative, or a trusted individual. The physical abuses include hitting, punching, slapping, burning, pushing, kicking, or false imprisonment, as well as giving excessive or improper medication. I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime.
This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and I am Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudato Jesus Christus.